we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Good to be with you today on the program. I'm Walker Wildman. I'm your host for the show At the Core on American Family Radio. Well, why At the Core? Well, that's because we talk about some of the core issues, some of the core values at American Family Association, and we don't shy away from those issues such as religious freedom, sanctity of life, stewardship, just to name a few. Marriage and family is another core value here at American Family Association. So that's why the show name At the Core. We have some special guests we have on the show today. We'll have Dr. Jessica Peck in the second segment. She's launching a new podcast, Dr. Nurse Mama, on the AFR web properties on the American Family Radio podcast platform. Dr. Peck will be on with us in the second segment. She's been on the show before in another role. We'll talk about her podcast coming up, launching in just a couple weeks, and how you can listen to it. It's going to be a great resource for families, great resource for parents, by the way. So that'll be in the second segment. And then in the last segment of today's show, we'll talk to Joe Beckler. He's Senior Director of Mission Investment over at Youth for Christ Ministries. And we'll talk about reaching youth with the gospel each year and what Youth for Christ Ministries, what they do day in and day out to reach the next generation. We are in Psalm chapter 66 this week, Psalm 66, reading verses 1 through 6, 1 through 7. Shout for joy to God, all the earth. Sing the glory of his name. Give to him glorious praise. Say to God, how awesome are your deeds. So great is your power that your enemies come cringing to you. All the earth worships you and sings praises to you, and they sing praises to your name. Come and see what God has done. He is awesome in his deeds towards the children of man. He turned the sea into a dry land. They passed through the river on foot. There did we rejoice in him who rules by his might forever, whose eyes keep watch on the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. That's just verses 1 through 7 here. But we see where David is recounting the miraculous deeds of God. David is not hesitating to recount the miraculous deeds of God because it's important. Recounting the miraculous works of our Creator is a pivotal part of our faith. And you see this throughout Scripture where the authors, they know the miracles of God. They've seen the miracles of God, and they still found it important to write and recount and retell the stories of the miracles of God. So we see here, David says, God turned the sea into dry land. They passed through the river on foot. And we could go on and on and on for hours and hours and hours and days and years on the miracles of God, recounting the miracles of God. Can you imagine if we recounted the miracles of God, not only in Scripture that are documented biblical cases, historical cases of God's miracles being performed, but can you imagine if we took that a step further and we recounted all the miracles of God throughout human history? Imagine how many years it would take us to recount those miracles. I mean, it's endless. Endless are the miracles of God. So don't hesitate to recall how God has worked miracles in your life. It's a blessing to yourself and to others. Let's see. I just can't. Well, before I jump into this story, we've got our Marriage Family Life Conference coming up in July. I really want you to come. We really want you to come, and we want you to bring the family. You can go over to marriagefamilylife.net, marriagefamilylife.net. The dates are July 6th through the 8th. July 6th through the 8th is the that is the dates. And you can register at marriagefamilylife.net, marriagefamilylife.net, and we want you to come. Go ahead and get your tickets, get you a hotel or a lodging arrangement. Go ahead and get your, you know, your PTO keyed in, get your time off from work keyed in, and get your plans together to come to Tupelo in July. It'll be a blessing to you, and it'll help equip you yourself and your children with the tools needed to defend their faith and live out their faith each and every day. That's July 6th through the 8th, marriagefamilylife.net. The Trump indictment is, of course, dominating the news cycle. And, I mean, yesterday, well, the past few days, really, were like a flashback to, you know, the 2016 election and the Trump administration. I mean, the media, they just love the guy. I mean, whether they admit it or not, the media is just absolutely obsessed with President Trump. I mean, think about it. Here we are, and not only just the media either, the haters as well. They are obsessed. We are 2 years removed, 2+ years removed from the Trump administration, and they're still talking about him. I mean, name me a former president that 2 years after they're out of office, every single day, they are still talking about him. Bush, no. Clinton, no. Obama, no. Reagan, no. Keep going. No. I mean, we're 2 years, not 2 days, not 2 weeks, not 2 months. 2 years plus removed from a Trump administration. And what do? Day in, day out. Trump, 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 Mar-a-Lago, Trump, Mar-a-Lago, lawsuit, Trump, rally, Trump, Mar-a-Lago, Trump. And this is unlike anything I've seen. So he does bring the ratings. We got to admit, he brings the ratings. And I think that's why the media is obsessed with him. Because whenever the media covers him, whether it be positive or negative, they bring in the ratings. They bring in the ratings. Maybe because he's like a character like no other that we've seen in modern political history in America. So maybe that's why everybody seems to love him, even though they won't say they love him. They do, because they talk about him all the time. But on to this indictment. I mean, this thing is reeking with corruption. It's reeking with politicization. I mean, everything about this indictment and these charges and this district attorney in New York City, I mean, everything about it is just screaming that this whole thing is a fraud. You know, some of the other hoaxes, some of the other frauds that we've seen against President Trump, we saw the, you know, the Russia hoax and then the Ukraine hoax, the Ukraine call hoax, and the list goes on. You know, with every one of them, you know, at least at the beginning, at least from the onset, they seemed like legitimate, you know, endeavors. And then, of course, you know, you start picking it apart, the truth starts coming out, and you're like, wait, this whole theory is built on sinking sand. But this, and that took time to kind of parse it out. But with this, like from day one, everybody's going, are you kidding me? I mean, these are 7-year-old charges that at best are misdemeanors. And this district attorney's having to up them to felonies just so he can charge them because the statute of limitations has run out. And you read through not only the charges, which our good colleague Abraham Hamilton III has expounded on this extensively in recent shows, which I'm not going to do because I'm not a lawyer and he is. But you read the 34-count indictment, and you read the statement of fact, which are two different documents. And this whole thing's like a very anticlimactic story. And you're reading it, number one, because we know all this stuff, because the media's been hammering it for 7 years. But you read the, you know, the statement of fact document, which I did last night, and I'm like, so where's the crime? So where is the crime? You know, you're reading it, and it's like, you know, basically Orange Man bad. I mean, he said this and said that, and this wasn't true, and that wasn't right. And the media does that day in and day out, by the way, along with our current president. But that's not a crime, right? So you're reading it. It's very anticlimactic. And I'm not the only one that thinks it's anticlimactic. Oh, let's listen to this. So this is on CNN. And by the way, CNN, the whole panel, you're going to listen to an excerpt of a panel discussion on CNN. And basically the whole panel is like, this is boring. This isn't a big deal. I don't even know what we're doing here. But more specifically, CNN analyst John Miller, he said, basically, this is a big nothing burger. Let's listen.
It's an interesting shift today because, and maybe it's all our own fault. You know, we've kind of whipped ourselves up over the last week about, you know, if they're bringing this case, it must be more than what we know is inside. And then we looked inside today and say, oh, it's just the same stuff we already knew. So what changed? You know, it's a 7-year-old case. In the DA's office, they called this the zombie case because every time they put it away, it came back to life. Nobody wanted to go forward with it.
Boy, are they excited. I mean, you can feel the energy. But I don't want to downplay this too much, all right? Because, look, at the end of the day, President Trump, he knows how to fight. I mean, the dude's got it like natural. He always comes out on top in these you know, fights. You go through all of them, and he always comes out the winner. So I don't suspect this is going to be any different. I really don't. But on a serious note, on a very serious note, whether you like Trump or not, and we've all got our preferred people that we like, and we think this person should be president, and some people say, I think it should be Trump for president. He's got a proven track record. We saw what he did for 4 years in office. No matter where you fall on this whole 2024, who you think should be the nominee, let's just set all that aside for now. All right. Because that's not really relevant here. All right. What is relevant is that what they're doing to Donald Trump is what they want to do to all of us. That's what's important here. What they are doing and what they have done. Remember, this is not the first rodeo. What they are doing and what they have done in the past is what they want to do to each and every one of us. And we've seen this on a smaller scale with various individuals. I mean, we've seen pretty much a lot of people that worked for President Trump. I mean, they've been gone after by, you know, private corporations and law enforcement agencies, etc. We see where, you know, Christians have been sought after by these Marxist God haters for a long time. We've seen Christian business owners and pastors and others have to defend themselves in court for various false accusations and non-crimes. But what this is about is twofold. This is number one, a trial run at what they can and will do to each and every one of us that don't toe the Marxist Party line. So this is why it's important that Donald Trump come out victorious in this witch hunt, in this banana republic witch hunt. It's important because it sets the stage for what they will or what they won't do to you and me down the road when we don't capitulate to what the Marxists want us to do. That's the first point here. The second point is this is aimed at eliminating Donald J. Trump for the not only for being the next president. They don't even want him to be the nominee. I mean, he's already declared his candidacy, so he's already in the primary race. They are aiming at blocking him from being the GOP nominee. This is all a distraction, folks. Do they really think these charges are going to hold? Absolutely not. That's why they've been sitting on it for 7 years. And guess when the district attorney's office wants the trial to begin? According to Breitbart, January 2024. Huh, what's going on in January 2024? Well, it's about 4 weeks out from the Iowa caucus. The first election, the first state in the Republican primary is Iowa, February 5th, 2024. The district attorney wants this case to begin in January of 2024 so they can block and distract Trump from being the nominee. That is the motive. We'll be back in a few.
And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Esther, a young girl, became queen of the Persian Empire when Israel was subject to Persian rule. A wicked man named Haman tried to get the king to exterminate all Jews. Esther, a Jew herself, was queen when this genocidal conspiracy was brought to bear. But her cousin Mordecai put her royal position in perspective. Perhaps God made you queen for this very moment, to intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. Like Esther, perhaps God gave you the platform, position, and influence you have for this very moment, to stand against darkness. Perhaps you were born for such a time as this.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Raising Godly Girls Minute with Patty Garibay of American Heritage Girls.
Do you live in Easter mode all year long? I'm not talking about fluffy bunnies and chocolate cream eggs, though who doesn't love those? I'm talking empty tomb, Christ is risen, Easter joy mode. It can be easy to take for granted what a risen Christ thousands of years ago means for us on earth today. But this Easter season, before you pack away the festive spring decor, make a calendar event for your phone sometime before next Easter. Make a day to celebrate the joy of the resurrection at any point of the year. Better yet, put your daughter in charge of that celebration. Task her with planning a surprise Easter party for your family to revel in the joy of our salvation when you're all least expecting it.
We are all called to raise up the next generation of Christian leaders. You can learn more about empowering girls through the love of God at RaisingGodlyGirls.com.
Let's be real. Retirement is expensive, and inflation is making it even harder with the cost of everything going up from pet food to a dozen eggs. Wouldn't it be great if the cost of your health care could go down? Well, MediShare 65 Plus is $99 a month for ages 65 to 74. And for many with Medicare Parts A and B, looking at other options, that's 50% or more saved per month. No gimmicks. It's $99 a month, and you can use any Medicare-approved doctor or facility, and you get 24/7 access to telehealth from the convenience of your home. Better yet, MediShare is a Christian nonprofit organization. It's a community that'll pray for you and encourage you. And since we've cut out the middleman, you get to keep the savings. Call now. You can learn more about MediShare 65 Plus. Here's the number, 833-45-BIBLE. That's 833-45-BIBLE, 833-45-BIBLE.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Your name is a lie that the shadows can't deny. Your name cannot be overcome. Your name is a light forever lifted high. Your name cannot be overcome. Your name, and your name is a light that the shadows can't deny. Your name cannot be overcome. Come on now, your name, and your name is a light. Your name cannot be overcome. Sing his name. Oh, Jesus, Jesus. You make the darkness tremble. Jesus, Jesus. You silence fear. You silence fear. We believe it. Jesus, Jesus. You make the darkness tremble. Jesus, Jesus.
Welcome back to the Core here on American Family Radio. For those maybe watching on streaming.afa.net, you noticed that Bobby caught me mid-coffee sip.
I was trying to do that. I was trying to set you up, bro.
I noticed, because out of like the 2 or 3 minutes there, you could have brought us back at any point, but leave it to Bobby to catch me mid-coffee sip there. But that's
it was
okay.
The Holy Spirit, bro.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't bother me, clearly. You know, it doesn't bother me at all. Hey, yeah, welcome back to the show at the Core. Hey, we do have video up at streaming.afa.net if you want to watch the show, streaming.afa.net, as we do each day. And a guest of the show, Dr. Jessica Peck, is with us today, and she's a pediatric nurse practitioner, has been so for 20 years or so, and is in studio with us. Dr. Peck, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Walker, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I've interviewed you on your book, and then we did another interview just to talk about overall parenting and how to work with teens and talk to them about different topics. But I do want to let our audience know that Dr. Jessica Peck's not just a guest anymore. She's actually launching an AFR podcast come April 24th. So in just about 2 weeks thereabouts, Dr. Peck's going to launch a podcast called Dr. Nurse Mama. She's already had a podcast going, but we're going to bring it under the AFR banner. So tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am just so excited about the podcast, by the way, and thank you so much for the warm welcome to American Family Radio. I could not be more thrilled about this. So for me, I am a pediatric nurse practitioner. I'm a professor at Baylor University. I'm a mom of 4. I used to say 4 teens, but my oldest turned 20 last week. So I've got 20, 18, 15, and 13. So as a professor, I'm really concerned about the research that's coming out about the impacts that of culture on today's youth. Mm-hmm. And as a nurse practitioner, I'm meeting families behind closed doors at a point of crisis. And as a mom, I know what it's like to want to do a good job and feel like you're failing miserably. Mm. So it just, you know, all of that with COVID kind of, you know, opening up this future where I could see the storm that was coming for parents. And it was already hard before COVID. Mm-hmm. But I think COVID has just made it so much harder. So I really want to engage families with hope for healthy relationships.
Yeah. And that's one thing I mention, you know, on the show often is we cover, that's one thing I love about American Family Association, American Family Radio, is we cover the culture from multiple angles. So we're not neglecting one angle or this angle or, you know, just specializing in this over here, but we're really trying to approach everything about life and culture and family, you know, and society from a biblical perspective across the whole, you know, spectrum. But at the root of virtually every societal and cultural issue that we talk about here on the show, it gets down to, Jessica, it gets down to the breakdown of the family.
Yeah.
And the breakdown of the family and the trajectory that our youth are going on. I mean, all of this is interconnected. And if we don't address that, the family and the health therein, and we neglect that to address that, then, it, you know, if you kind of jump in, I guess a good analogy would be jumping kind of at halftime, you've already lost so much ground. It's so important that we tackle the issues of the day in the home and really help parents know how to be good parents and do the best they can.
Absolutely. And I think right now parents are tending to go to fear-based parenting, where we're constantly hearing about another new threat that seems to want to take over our children. And that's really terrifying. So I want to empower parents with knowledge on how do you intentionally have conversations with your kids. Sometimes parents can be hesitant to initiate those conversations, but and because they don't want to expose them to something maybe that they haven't been exposed to before. But we have to intentionally expose them in a way that's developmentally appropriate, mm-hmm. that prepares them for the threat ahead, and that positions us as the expert and signals to them we're a safe space that you can come back to and we can have this conversation and I can help you navigate these challenges that are going to come.
Yeah, and it seems, just as being a young dad, it seems that there's kind of two extremes on the parenting spectrum, if you will, and we're speaking very broadly here. You know, everybody's different, but yeah. To your point about the fear-based parenting, you know, there's kind of the old school, you know, yeah. I'm going to get my belt out on you, you know, and you're going to get a spanking and you're grounded, you know, you better do what I say, yeah. you know, or X, Y, Z. And there's probably a place for that. As a matter of fact, there is, you know, and sometimes I pull that out with my boys. You know, I've told you three times to pick up the toys. If you don't, you're about to get a spanking, timeout, you know, or maybe some kind of other consequence. So there's kind of that approach. And some people, that's all they do is the kind of the threat, you know, a disciplinary, you know, consequence-based parenting. And then there's the kind of the far other side of, you know, I don't want to upset my kids. I don't want them to be mad at me. You know, this almost like treating your children as like they're your peer.
Right.
There's that extreme, which of course is if you do, if that's all you do, is very unhealthy. So you kind of have those two spectrums, and, you know, really the best is probably to fall somewhere in between. But what are you seeing today? I mean, is there, does there seem to be a dominating parenting approach, or are you seeing people just parenting approaches being all over the place?
They are all over the place, but there are a few prominent ones. One is helicopter parenting, just hovering, you know, where our kids can't. When I was growing up, I'm sure you were the same. It was be back when the streetlights come on, you know, or just you go somewhere you don't have life 360, right, where your parents are tracking you. There's also lawnmower parenting, where you keep everything manicured. Everything should be perfect in their life. They should never encounter any messiness or hardship.
Yeah.
There's also bulldozer parenting, where I'm going to knock down any obstacle. I also hear a lot about gatekeeping, which actually in Gen Z, they use the term gatekeep in a very negative way. And gatekeeping parenting means I'm going to hold that gate and protect my kid from any negative influence that might come into their life. But the truth is, Walker, in today's day and age, where we're living at the speed of a smartphone, that's not possible. We cannot protect our kid from every threat. So I think the best and most healthy form of parenting is coaching. Kids at first, they need a teacher. We teach them how to ride a bike, how to tie their shoes, how to, you know, chew with their mouth closed, all of these things. And there's a lot of gratification in that stage of parenting, because you know when you've taught them that, you can feel good about it.
And you're
it.
Seeing the results in real time.
Yes.
Pretty close to real time.
Yes. But when they're teenagers and you're teaching them to be respectful and responsible, it's not as tangible and it's hard. So that's when we have to transition to coach. And the number one responsibility of a coach is to make sure the practice environment is safe. Push them when they need to be pushed. Pull them back when they need to rest. Encourage them in their victory. Celebrate with them and also learn from their defeats. But they really need us to have, they need to have more independence. I'm seeing a lot of kids today that really don't have a lot of life skills, frankly. They don't know how to call and make an appointment for themselves. Just the thought of talking to someone on the phone gives them anxiety. So we have to say, okay, you know what? There's not much that you're going to do that's high stakes to fail in calling to make an appointment.
True.
You
what,
have
what
to do it.
What could go wrong here?
Right, you know? Exactly, exactly.
Maybe you double book yourself.
Right.
That's, if that's the worst thing you do for the week, you're doing pretty
not
well.
Bad.
You know, Doctor, once again, we're talking to Dr. Jessica Peck. She's launching an American Family Radio podcast in about 2 weeks on April 24th. It's a Monday, and she already has 8 episodes recorded, and we're going to upload those about once a week. It's going to be a great resource for parents and even for grandparents. You know,
yes.
If you're a grandparent and maybe you've been brought to a situation where you're helping raise your grandkids, or you just want to be a positive influence on your children, who are they're the ones actually raising, you know, your grandkids, and you just want to be a positive influence, of course, you know, this is going to be a great podcast for you. But Dr. Jessica, I of course, talk about parenting on my show often, talk about the role of families. And, you know, I don't want to minimize the cultural influence on our children. It's unlike anything we've seen as far as the peer pressure. You have media, entertainment, social media. You got all these different, you know, avenues of influence that are coming into our households, whether we like it or not. And so I don't want to minimize those, downplay those. We talk about these issues all the time. I read the surveys, the studies, etc. And I warn parents that they need to know what's going on in their child's life and protect their children to the greatest extent they can. But I mentioned the other day that so much can be headed off, if that's proper grammar. So much can be, you know, we can get in front of, if you will, so much of this that's under our, as a parent, it's under our direct control and influence. I mean, you know, what happens, you know, when they go to college, or, you know, what may or may not happen while they're at school or at church on Wednesday night. I mean, yes, there's a lot of that going on, and we need to be aware of that. But there's so much time that's spent under the roof, under our supervision, where we can pour into our children's life, that we've really got to make sure we're taking full advantage of that time.
Well, here is where I go and step on some toes, including mine, because time is our most valuable commodity. But the honest truth is today, Walker, that we are living so quickly and our days are packed with school events and sporting events. And honestly, just look at your own screen time on your smartphone, you know, and how much time we waste. And if we are intentional in pursuing the hearts of our kids through relationship, the only way that you can get there is time. You yeah. can't buy it. You can't borrow it. You know, it takes blood, sweat, and tears to do that. And I think it's hard for parents because, especially for parents of teenagers, they have this perception that I can't get my teen to look up from their smartphone. They don't want anything to do with me. They don't care what I say. Mm-hmm. And research tells us that is just not the case, that parents are by far the most important influence in their life. Mm-hmm. And we have to pour into them even when they're not giving us that immediate gratification of, oh, thanks, Mom. I'm so glad you initiated this conversation. I've been waiting to talk with you. You know, I mean,
you're not going to get that.
No.
If you do, you need to be very suspect.
Exactly. So you know what? I use food, honestly, sometimes to get my teenagers. Like, I'll put a snack in the oven and, you know, maybe it's 8 o'clock at night. And
it draws them to the kitchen.
Yes, they'll come down and see, or I have a chair that's by my office. So they'll just come and sit in the chair and just be very casual, like, hey, and I'll say, hey, and just I'll let them sit there and get comfortable. And I know they're signaling to me they want to talk. And that's a signal for me to listen with my face, put down what I'm doing and say, hey, you have my full attention. What can I do for you? That's what they want.
And on this topic of, wow, we've only got 3 minutes.
Oh,
this
has
gone by quick. I'm just getting started. We'll have you on again.
Okay.
I know how to call you now.
Yeah, that's
Bobby's
right.
Bobby's got your number.
I'm part of the family now.
Hey, on the device, you know, I mentioned to you in my office this morning that, you know, I catch myself on Twitter too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just scrolling and scrolling. It's like, and I ask myself, what am I looking for? Like, what am I going to see that goes, all right, I'm good to go now? The reality is nothing.
A cat video.
Yeah, right. Nothing's going to get me off there. There's just continual news and information that I find interesting. But this is, people don't think of it like this, but this is kind of a new phenomenon. I mean, in the era of psychology and science and studying behavior, the whole smart device and social media is really, really kind of a new thing. And I think more people are beginning to realize that this can be a problem sometimes.
It is. And that's what we talked about, is that you have to know that every social media platform in the world is employing the world's best psychologist, whose sole job is to develop an algorithm that makes you not want to put your phone down. Mm. And just because we're 40 something, you know, you're old adults, doesn't mean that we're not susceptible to that too. Mm. And I've had this conversation, you know, with my son, where I'll, you know, tell him sanctimoniously about his screen time and justify mine. And he told me, well, Facebook is just Fortnite for adults. And he's right.
Wow.
And so we have to really
take
a look at ourselves. If you're having trouble with your kids' screen time, then you really have to take a good, hard look at yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you did mention today, you know, there's, of course, no one-size-fits-all. But the reality is, folks, we're trying to give tips. We're kind of trying to give advice because nobody else is.
That's right.
And so you did mention, as far as when do you think it's appropriate, and when young adults are ready, if you will, or mature enough to handle social media. What do you think?
Well, you know, there are no official guidelines, but I think at least 18. Mm. I just do not think that kids are capable of creating a digital footprint. Now, there will be some exceptions to that.
Sure.
But for the most part, I think the longer they wait, the better off they'll be.
Yeah. They'll have plenty of adult years to get them a Twitter profile.
Exactly.
Get on Facebook, etc. So, very good tips, Jessica. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, and I'll see you at the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast.
Absolutely. All right, folks, that's Dr. Jessica Peck, and she's out of Houston, Texas, 20 years as a pediatric nurse practitioner, a Baylor professor as well, and she's going to have a new podcast, Dr. Nurse Mama. It will launch on April 24th. It's a Monday. We'll upload it there on AFR.net, on the AFR app, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You're not going to want to miss it. It's going to be a great resource for our families. Thanks so much for joining The Core. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hi, this is Miki Addison. Join me, my husband Will, and our kids for AFA at the Ark. We'll also be joined by Wesley and Walker Wildman and their families as we host a mini conference at the Ark Encounter October 26th and 27th. AFA has reserved a block of rooms at the Marriott Cincinnati Airport Hotel, which will be available at a discounted price. Space is limited. Learn more and register at marriagefamilylife.net. And I hope to see you at the Ark.
What does the American Family Association stand for? We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I'm Corey, and this is my story. I was going through some financial troubles paying off my credit cards. I was paying high interest rates, and it just wasn't getting any better. And I knew I had to do something. So my mom told me about Trinity, and so I decided to call. Trinity was able to do something that I couldn't. I'm paying off my debt, I'm saving thousands, and things are really looking up. I promise you guys, you will not regret it when you call Trinity, because it was such a relief and less stress in my life, and it was the best thing I could have done for myself, because once I called Trinity, they took care of me, and I felt such a relief, a weight off my shoulders, and they are a Christian-based company. I love it.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
I'm Corey, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
Here's Steve Russo with Real Answers.
The resurrection is essential to experience life the way God intended. By faith in Jesus, we are united with Him in His resurrection. Jesus' victory over death and the grave becomes our victory over death and the grave. Jesus' victory over sin and Satan becomes our victory over sin and Satan. This victory enables the believer to turn from sin that once enslaved and walk in obedience to Christ. It also gives the believer hope. The Bible reminds us in 1 Peter 1:3, in His great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. This hope is the ultimate answer to the universal problem of death. Through faith in Jesus, we experience life the way God intended here and in heaven.
For real answers to real issues, log on to Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you with us on the program. You know, that that podcast that I talked to Dr. Jessica Peck about, it's very exciting, and I think it's going to be a great, great tool for parents to learn really how to be effective parents and how to be parents that that are intentional and of course, pour the Word of God into our children and our teenagers and our young adults. We've got to continue improving. We got to do better as parents. I mean, I'm talking to myself here. We've just got to be intentional. There's so many moving parts, so many influences on our lives and the lives of our children that we can't waste a moment. We really can't waste a moment. We got to be on our A game. We got to be intentional, and we got to step it up, so that we can raise a new generation that will carry the torch of freedom and the torch of the gospel of Jesus Christ to the next generation, as the Apostle Paul talks about. I do want to introduce our next guest. We have on us Joe Beckler. He's Senior Director of Mission Investment over at Youth for Christ, and he's on the program with us now. Joe, welcome to At the Core.
Hey, Walker. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Absolutely. Well, you know, continuing this topic, Joe, of reaching America's youth and reaching our children with the gospel of Jesus Christ and really helping to transform their lives, give our audience, those who aren't familiar with, give our audience a backgrounder of Youth for Christ and, you know, what the core issues that you guys work on around the nation.
That's great. So, Youth for Christ has actually been around since 1944. Our first full-time employee was Billy Graham. As a matter of fact, Tori Johnson was one of our founder, and Billy Graham, they were instrumental in leading rallies back in the beginnings of Youth for Christ. And so you can imagine over all these years, we've had this fun, agile strategy to engage young people with the good news of Jesus Christ. And that has really morphed over the years to just figure out what is the best way to come alongside young people with the good news of Jesus. So when I talk about Youth for Christ, I love to say we're one of many really great organizations out there that are working with young people. Our target audience is young people ages 11 to 19. We really seek to reach young people everywhere. So we're actually the USA national organization is who I work for. We have around 1,400 ministry sites across the U.S. We're actually part of Youth for Christ International, which has about 112 countries that have Youth for Christ embedded in those countries doing really good work. But here in the United States, we are really concerned with reaching young people everywhere. But we desire to work alongside the local church because that's what we're called to do, support the local church and work with other like-minded partners in the community to raise up lifelong followers of Jesus Christ. We want them to discover godliness and lifestyle, devotion to the Word of God, prayer, and passion for sharing the love of Christ, and commitment to social involvement as well, because a lot of our young people they probably describe themselves as feeling at risk. Oftentimes I'm asked, "Would tell me about the average young person you connect with." Well, we're working in urban locations across the United States, suburban environments where they're middle school, high school campuses. We're also working with deaf and hard of hearing kids. We're working with teen parents, young people who are living in a military context on a base somewhere in the United States or overseas. We have a campus program designed for them. We really try and just identify how we can step in and help young people who for several different reasons, you can only imagine, and they're feeling at risk. And we want to be with them and introduce them to Jesus Christ. And a lot of times what that means is attacking some of the main issues that they're facing immediately in order to be able to set conditions so that they really can genuinely hear the good news about Jesus.
Yeah, and to your point, Joe, in the ideal scenario, you've got, a mom and a dad and parents that are pouring into their children and investing in discipling their children. And even in that ideal situation, we still need very positive outside influences, if you will, such as Youth for Christ. Mm-hmm. But what you're talking about, Joe, is some of the places you guys are going around the country and where you guys have, a local hand, if you will, some of these are very broken communities where statistically speaking, a lot of these kids don't have parents at home. A lot of them don't have a stable home life. So talk a little bit about how you're helping to be that positive influence that some of these children don't even have at all.
Yeah, it's actually pretty shocking. Statistics that we've been looking at and trying to understand post-COVID would say that 1/3 of young people report they have no trusted adult in their life. But let that sink in. 1/3 of young people in the United States, so age 11 to 19. So we realize that for us, a lot of times it's unfortunate that the family system is just not the go-to environment for young people, for kids. They need adults to come alongside them as a trusted place to be able just to some of the basics of life. And so we realize that first step forward with the gospel of Jesus makes all the difference in transforming young people, giving them hope and helping them rise above their circumstances. And so that's the problem we're seeking to attack. And in this post-pandemic reality, the stakes are even higher. Statistics tell us, Pew Research says that I think it's one in every, I've got the statistic in front of me here and I want to get it right, that people are not coming back to the local church after the COVID experience. And This is shocking. And personally, I've seen it in young people that we've been working with in a lot of our camp environments, in our camping and trips programs. They're having a hard time socializing after being in isolation for so long. So a lot of the work that we're invested in is just to get to them, to create meaningful relationships, relational evangelism strategy that is going to make the difference in their lives, to be able to introduce them to Jesus so they can make an informed decision about faith. And one of the things we discovered is that this past year, when we look at what happened within our ministry alone, we've seen twice the number of young people accept Jesus this past year in ministry. So what we see is young people are hungry. Right now, the branding on young people is that they're intimidating, they're troubled, there's all kinds of things going on around them that's just way more important to them than thinking about faith. But what we're discovering is that if you come to them with genuine love and you present the gospel, there is a hunger. There's a hunger on the streets of America for the gospel. For young people want to hear more and more about Jesus. We've got three things that we're doing through youth. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead, Joe. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so there's three things that we are focusing on as we move forward. The vision is that we realize if we're going to do this and really begin to attack the challenges that we see in young people who are feeling at risk across the United States, part of that is we've got to raise up volunteers. So our first strategy is to multiply. We've got to multiply our ability to scale our ministry strategies in so many cities across this country and at rural, urban environments everywhere. And so our goal is 200,000 volunteers because we believe that that's the number that we need in order to effectively see a day when annually 1 million young people are being reached with the good news of Jesus and being brought into a meaningful, authentic, Christ-sharing relationship with an adult. So multiplying is key for us. That's more ministry sites, more volunteers. We want to scale this ministry because of what we're seeing currently in the work we're doing and how that could grow. So that's our long game strategy, multiply. Second, simplify. We realize that the gospel is the most important thing that we can deliver to young people. And oftentimes it is starting with addressing what are the things that are making them feel at risk. Are they in a situation where they've been through trauma, or they're not getting enough to eat, or their family situation is just not optimal, or maybe their home's great, but mom and dad are just not present because of all kinds of circumstances. And so whatever the circumstance, we're really trying to simplify our focus on the main thing that we believe is going to make a difference. And then finally, the other part of our strategy is to really focus in on exemplifying good relational evangelism. And doing this is a team sport. So we want to come alongside local churches, like-minded organizations, and really reflect this relational evangelism strategy that has been at the heart of Youth for Christ throughout our entire existence. And we call it three-story evangelism. It's this idea that we're looking for the convergence of God's story, the person's story that we're engaging, and our story. And where the three of those meet, there's this amazing opportunity to share how God is impacting our lives through Jesus and providing hope to young people.
Mm. Amen, Joe. Hey, tell our audience where to find you on the internet. What's the URL?
Yeah, yfc.net. If you go to yfc.net, you can learn more about our ministry models. There's a great directory to show you where we are present across the United States. And I really encourage you to go and check out our stories feed as well. The stories link will take you to where God's at work. And it's a terrific way to understand kind of how it works and what we're exactly doing. And the real heroes out there are the leaders in the field and the volunteers that are actively engaging young people one person at a time and just loving them and showing them the goodness of Jesus.
Amen. Hey, thanks so much, Joe, for coming on. Appreciate the work that you're doing.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been great.
Absolutely. All right. Appreciate that, brother. That's Joe Beckler. He's with Youth for Christ. Once again, that URL is yfc.org. Yfc.net. Hey, I want to get to one story. This one just, I mean, it just tripped me up in a funny way this morning. But I came across this story on actually on Breitbart, I think was the news outlet that I found this. But listen to this. Twitter ads. So on Twitter, for those who are familiar with it, and even if you're not, this makes complete sense. If you're like a government official, Twitter will note in your profile right beside your name and your Twitter handle that you're a U.S. congressman or a U.S. senator. If you're maybe in the Biden administration, it will put, U.S. government official account. Well, Twitter does this also to state-run media outlets. So China has their own state-run media. Russia Today, they've got their own state-run media, RT is what it's called. And then you could go to other nations and apply the same, the same framework. And so this has been going on Twitter for a long time, where these notations are made on the profile. Well, there's been discussion for a while on whether National Public Radio, or NPR, should be noted as a state-run media outlet, which is, it makes complete sense. But of course, NPR resisted, and they pushed back, and Twitter, never did it under Jack Dorsey and others. But finally, Elon Musk and his crew, they put U.S. state-affiliated media under the NPR Twitter handle. And of course, NPR's losing it. How dare you? You can't do that. We're not state-affiliated media. But in reality, they are, folks. They very much are. They do receive some private funding, but they also receive a lot of federal and state funding. NPR does. And so they're closely in bed with the federal government. There's a very, very tight formal relationship there. And so by definition, whether they like it or not, and NPR tries to say, oh, no, we're independent, we're not. Well, that's what, Russia Today says as well. Well, we're independent. We're not state affiliated. Oh, yes, you are. So Twitter went, full transparency on NPR and has listed U.S. state affiliated media under the Twitter handle over at NPR. And you know what I say to NPR? By the way, why are we still investing our tax dollars in media outlets?
Amen.
I mean, this, folks, this ain't the 60s, all right? If you like my southern slang there, this ain't. This isn't the 60s, folks. We're not under a desperate need of information. We've got it galore, all right? And we've got abundant media resources and outlets. So the days of filling the need for taxpayer money to fund some kind of media outlet, those are way gone. All right? Those are way gone. We're not riding horses anymore in carriages to the convenience store. So why are we still funding NPR? I mean, it's unfortunate for people maybe that work for NPR, but things change. Times change. Do we need it? Does it serve our nation's interest to fund NPR with tax dollars? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. We have a plethora, I like my word. We have a plethora of outlets and media companies out there to get news and information from. No need for NPR anymore. At the Core, thanks for joining the show. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.